Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Yaakov Avinu is traveling, and he's coming towards Eretz Yisrael, and he knows he's on his way to Esav. He's going to meet. He hears that Esav is coming to meet him. He prepares for the meeting, and he's along with his people, his gift that he's prepared for Esav. The pasuk reads as follows: Vayokum b'alayla hu, vayikach et shtei nasha ve'shtei shifchosa ve'tachar aso yulado, vayavar es ma'avar yabok. So he crosses, he goes with his family. So Yaakov comes with his 11 children and he crosses. Now 11 children,
we know that Binyamin was not yet born. Right?
But he doesn't have 11 children. He has 12 children. Right? Because he has Dinah. So, says Rashi, it's a famous Rashi, V'sachar asa yilada. V'dina ayecha naisa. Where is Dina? Where is Dina? So Rashi says, famously, Nisona bateva. Yaakov had placed her in a box, V'noal b'fana, and locked it, Shalo yitein ba Esav eno. So that Esav would not be able to lay his eyes on her. U'lekach, Ne'enash Yaakov Shem Noam Ochiv Shematach Zimenu Lamuta V'nafla B'yad Shechem. He locks Dina in a box. He's afraid that Esav is going to kidnap her and take her. It's interesting.
If you go back to where Yaakov learned this trick from, right? The Abbas are always protecting their wives, right? They're trying to protect their wives, and a lot of these stories. So we saw it by Avram, right? Twice. We saw it by Yitzchak. We saw it by Yaakov. Right? We're seeing it by Yaakov. And what Yaakov does here, he learns from his grandfather Avram Avinu, who hid his wife in a box because of why? Because he was afraid of Paro. Interestingly. Right? Here, Yaakov has a very beautiful wife. Right? Maybe more than one beautiful wife, but certainly Leah is very beautiful. He doesn't hide her in a box. Right? I'm just saying, as dirty as Esav is, he's still a Yid. He's still a Yid. It's important now, he comes from a Yiddish place. Put it that way, right? Because Yaakov wasn't afraid that he was just going to like say, "Get out of my way, she's mine, I'm taking her," right? But nevertheless, Dina was not married. Right? Dina was not married. Yaakov's scared that Esau is going to try to marry her. All right. Says Rashi, therefore Yaakov was punished. Yaakov was punished because he held back from his brother the opportunity to marry Dina. Because possibly Dina, Shema Tachzivena Lamuta, perhaps Dina would have been Makarev him and brought him back to Tshuva. And therefore, V'nafla B'yachem, that is the reason why Dina was kidnapped and raped by Shechem. As the Medrash says, listen, Yaakov, you don't want to marry off your daughter, allow your daughter to marry I don't know what you want to call him. It's not exactly what you call him, a Yid, not a Yid, whatever he is. But he's, you don't want to let someone who comes from a decent family who has a bris milah. So okay, so he'll she'll be taken violently, as opposed to nicely by Esav, so to speak, she'll be taken violently and against her will by an Aharon, if someone's not circumcised. Right? That's what the Medrash says. And that's what happened. Now, you know, we know this story from long ago, but there's a difficulty with this. I mean, Chazal are telling us essentially that Yaakov Avinu sinned here. But there's a basic question, and that is what was Yaakov supposed to think? What was he supposed to have done to marry it, to take his beloved Dinah and marry her off to Esav? Wait a second, Esav was a real Russia. Esav was a Russia. Spent his whole life, right, enmeshed in idolatry, involved in sexual immorality, and violence. I mean, he was an animal, you know. He was a wild man. Esav, he's the most central part of this question. Esav had grown up where? In the house of Yitzchak Avinu. In the house of Rivka Imenu. Esav had an opportunity to be drawn close to Torah, and certainly there were those who reached out to him. Undoubtedly. His father Yitzchak, right, who of course wanted his spiritual success. His mother Rivka, who certainly, you know, made him pancakes and says, come, you know, let's read Aleph Beis, come, you know. But you think this, his mother didn't try to be Makarim? Didn't try to teach him? Certainly so. But they failed. For better or worse, they failed. They've been unsuccessful. He grew up in the lap of Avram Avinu's grandfather. Avram Avinu, the biggest NCSY worker, magic miracle worker in the world, couldn't be Makarim. He couldn't be Makarim, his grandson Esau. And again, not Rivka, and not Yitzchak. Nor Yaakov, for that matter. Yeah, they also grew up together. So, it doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense to suggest that Rivka, that Dina would have been successfully Makarim. It doesn't follow. Why is Yaakov taken to task? How could he be punished like this? What was he supposed to think? So how did Chazal know this? Right? How did Chazal know this? How could the Torah have said that she could have? And the answer is that there's a fundamental, basic, obvious difference between all these other said personalities and Dina. And that is, as great, as powerful, as influential as Abraham, Yitzchak, and Rivka, and Yaakov all were respectively, they still were not and would never be Esav's wife. They were not his wife. And Chazal are teaching that a wife, one's wife has the ability, has the power, has the sensitivity and the brilliance to be able to influence her husband in ways that no one else, the greatest people, the greatest kiruv workers, the greatest people in the world history could not do and cannot do. And therefore, one's wife is the single most spiritually significant person in a person's life. And therefore, the fact that Yaakov turned his back, so to speak, from Esau's last operation, last chance, his last chance, the Jew was marrying him off to a kosher girl. And from the fact that he didn't do that, he was guilty. He was guilty of his brother remaining off the derech. Consider that. Tremendous statement. Unbelievable statement. Yaakov Avinu was responsible for Esav's continued rishus, and therefore he was punished for it. Yaakov was punished. One only has to consider, to follow that to its conclusion, if it were true, if Yaakov really did marry off his daughter Dinah, and indeed, Chazal are confident that it could be he would have done tshuva. Consider the historic development. Consider that all of the world of Esav, right, Edom would be told as Aaron. You know what I'm saying? Would be kosher yid, right? Could you exactly Amalek as well? Could you imagine that? Just consider that. If that were really true, and Yaakov, quote unquote, Chazal are telling us, dropped the ball. That's so difficult. So difficult to have done that successfully. To have done it. I mean, I would have made the same decision like Yaakov. But Chazal tell us that's why he was punished. What I'd like to examine tonight here is this lesson. What I call, and I don't say this, cliche, and I don't say this, in a flippant manner. What I would call the single most important decision in a person's life is who they marry. The single most important decision is who they marry. It's the most profound effect on their future, on their spiritual success, or God forbid the opposite, on their development as a human being. Let me tell you a story. If you look at the beginning of Parshas Korach, in the beginning of Parshas Korach, the Torah tells us, I'll read to you, Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kohath ben Levi v'dasan v'aviram b'nei Aliyah v'on ben Peles b'nei Ruve v'yakumu l'fnei Moshe v'anoshim b'nei Yisrael chamishim v'masayim. And they say, hey, what are you doing? Moshe Rabbeinu is ridiculous. You're killing us. You're killing us. You're stealing all the show for yourself. It's not fair. We also want to be leaders, right? You know the story, Korah? I know the summer parsha. Right, but you know the story a little bit? You've heard of Korah? No?
Yes.
All right. Now, if you were listening to the words I just told you, right? If you listen carefully and you track all the personalities quoted to us, just in the very first, opening the beginning verse of the section, and you follow them through the rest of the story, there's a mystery. There's a mystery. The Torah again tells us about Korach, V'Dasan, V'Aviram, V'On Ben Peles. Essentially, four immediate personages that the Torah tells us about are these four: Korach, Dasan, Aviram, and On. Now, what happened to Korach? We know. Dasan, Aviram, we know. On? Pardon me. Who the heck is On? We never heard of On. And where does he go? What happened to him? He disappears. I mean, no pun intended. He disappears. He doesn't disappear in the same place that. We don't find him again in this story. What happened? Right? We know, famously, if you read the rest of the story, Korach gets swallowed up on the ground, blah, 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 and then it burns it. His men got burned. What happened to that? So the Gemara asks this question. The Gemara tells us a fascinating story. The Gemara says, I'm going to read it to you. Okay? Actually, photocopy it, but any make photocopies for you if you're interested. I could. The Sanhedrin, the Kuf Yud Amar Al. The Gemara tells us that On Ben Peles was saved. On Ben Peles got out. What happened? Here's the story. I'm paraphrasing. Onan Peles was saved by his wife. She said to him, why are you busying yourself with Korach? What are you going to gain from this rebellion? If Moshe wins, so who's going to be the leader? Moshe. If Korach wins, who's going to be the leader? Korach. Right? Like in Washington. There's only one big fish. Everyone else is not. It's pretty much insignificant. You can say, I'm the secretary. To the secretary, who cares about you? But at the end of the day, you're not really anyone in Washington. Only the man on top. So why are you busying yourself with this? Stupid. You're stupid. No matter what happens, you're going to be a loser. You're going to be a follower. You're not going to be a leader. So she starts to break down Owen's argument. Right, to Owen's interest. Then Owen says, okay, listen, I hear what you're saying. But what am I supposed to do? I'm stuck. You know, I already promised them. I'm going to come with them into the big revolt, you know. No, the redcoats, you know, whatever it is. I can't do it. I'm going to back out now. She says, don't worry. Just leave it to me. Leave it to me. So, come. Let's have something to eat. Right? So she gives him a drink. And then another drink. And then another drink. And before long, Owen is fast asleep. So what does Ashes Owen do? Something totally unexpected. Okay, this is like out of the movies. I mean, this is crazy. I mean, out of the Jewish theater. Out of the Jewish movies. Okay? She walks outside the tent, and she tears off her shetel. Alright? Or her, whatever you want to call it, her tichel. Okay? And she has this, you know, long, beautiful hair. And she's sitting outside the tent, totally, you know, in the Torah community is immodest, or certainly not as for married women. And these people come by, and like, we're on the way. Okay, where's Owen? Hey, what are you doing here? She's like, right? They're like, we're holy, right? Right? We're called either what? Kulam Kedoshim. We would never, we just want to rebel against God and Moshe. We don't want to be involved in, you know, promiscuity. We're getting out of here. Right? We don't even know who you are. Right? So she's like, you know, so they think this can't be Owen's house because look at this, you know, unmarried G standing there. We gotta get out of here. All right. So they run for their lives, right? And again, since they don't know how to get to Owen, and Owen is, you know, fast asleep, you know, drunk. So Owen's wife saved him. Of course, what happens just a few minutes later, right? You know, it's like, what's that noise? You know, like everything. Like, they've been destroyed. She saves her husband, and the Gemara continues. The Gemara says, and this is in contrast to Korach's wife. How did Korach get himself killed? Because Korach's wife said, oh, you doormat. You shaita. Look how these rabbis walk all over you. Yeah? Look what he's doing to you. Moshe takes all the miser for himself. And then you say, no, it's not miser. It's truma. It goes to the kohen. He's like, okay, so give it to my brother. Right? He gets the kohen. And he gets the truma. Right? So then you say, okay, listen. And whatever you give to any kohen, I have to get also a truma's miser. No, because he's worried. I give anything good to me. I give Chumas Meiser, right? I have to give to
Levi.
No, the Kohen. Even for the, if you want to tell me, basically, essentially, whatever you're going to do, Moshe Rabbeinu is taking a cut for him and his family, and he's hogging everything for himself. And not only that, and this already the the Gemara here, the Zohar talks about this as well. This sounds funny, but the Torah tells us in Sefer Midbar that the Levim would have to shave their head before they become a Levi. Right, I'm a Levi. Don't ask questions. I'm a Levi. All right. So they shave. They would have to shave. They would have to. So she says, Look at you. You're bald. As she says, you're baldy. That's what she says to her husband. What are you doing? You look like Mr. Clean. Right? And Moshe Rabbeinu is walking around. Aaron HaKohen is walking around with this fancy, beautiful, you know, turban with a nice hat. And you're walking around, you look like a weirdo. So she gets him all crazy. She gets him all riled up. He says, yeah, you're right. This is ridiculous. I'm being taken advantage of. And that's why, you know, and that's why, that's why he did it then. She says to him, in other words, they're treating you, I don't want to say it, I can't say this, but they're treating you like a piece of excrement, that's what she says to her husband, right? They're treating you like a piece of excrement. And you know why they did this to you? Because they're jealous, because you had nice hair. And they say, you have nice hair. And they shaved it off you, right? And so he gets all crazy, and he goes and he does what he does, and he rebels. Right? And about this, the Gemara ends off. The Gemara tells us. The Gemara says, "Hainu d'ksiv." That's what it means. The pasuk says in Mishlei, "Chachmos nashim bansa beza." Right, that the wisdom of a woman develops and builds up her house. That's the wife, refers to the wife of home. And then the pasuk continues. But a foolish woman shall destroy her house with her own hand. That's the wife of Korach. And here is just a story. There's one story that the Torah tells us, the Gemara tells us, about how a woman has the koach, has the power to ruin her husband or to save her husband. To ruin her husband or to save her husband. I want to tell you another story. I want to tell you another story before we look elsewhere. This is a story that the Medrash Rabbah in Sefer Bereshis and Bereshis Rabbah Perik Yud Zayin, or this is Perik Yud Zayin Zayin. Look it up. The Medrash tells us the following remarkable story. There was once a chassid. So that's his title. There was once a chassid. And the chassid was married to a chassida, obviously, yeah. The chassid was married to a chassida, and they were living happily ever after. Except there was one problem. The problem was, unfortunately, tragically, they had no children. They couldn't have any children. And this righteous tzaddik is married to this righteous tzaddik, and they have no children. So they said to each other, listen to this interesting conversation. They said to each other, you know, we're not really doing anything for the world here. We're not building Hashem's world. We have no children. And we're, so to speak, already perfect. So you know what? Let's get divorced. Let's get divorced. And we'll remarry. Each of us will remarry someone who's the opposite of us. Someone who's the opposite. So what happens? In other words, not a child. So the marriage says, Amdu v'garshu zeh zeh, they divorced. Holach zeh v'nasa risha. Hol chazos v'nasa l'rasha. What happened? Right? The chasida married a Rasha. Okay? And the chasid married a Rasha. Now they're divorced, and they each marry not a righteous person. So the Medrash says as follows. The one who married the tzaddik, the chasid, who married a wicked woman, asta also Rasha. This new wife of his turned him into a Rasha. And the one who, and this woman, this righteous woman, who had divorced and married a Rasha, asta also tzaddik. She turned this guy into a tzaddik. Finishes the marriage. Heve, you see from this,
Shakol min ha'isha. Everything follows the woman. Shakol min ha'isha. The success of a Jewish family comes from the spiritual status of a woman. An unbelievable story. This guy was a tzaddik. he marries an evil woman, and before long he's evil. And the woman who's a tzaddik marries a Russian. Before long, he's a tzaddik. He becomes a tzaddik. Unbelievable, you saw it. Hakol holer hachar isha. Everything follows the woman. Everything follows the woman. Rabosai, I want to tell you something. And I have more riots for you. But I can say the biggest raya of all, is the type of raya that I can say that I've seen with my own eyes. More than once and more than twice. But I know people who are great people. I know them, they're hailing, they're holy, they're kosher, they're good, they're shomer mitzvahs, they keep the halacha. They're good guys. They learn. They daven. They're hailing. But they make one small mistake. Just a small little mistake. They say, I met this girl. She's so nice. She is nice. She's nice. And she's cute. Right? And she's not a bad person. Not a bad person. But you know, I am, she's not, I'm not much firmer than her, but she's not anti me. She's fine, you know. She's not on my level. And they make the life long mistake. The consequence of which they have to deal with, of marrying this woman. And you know, when they're at work in the office, like they are most of the day. Right? Let's not kid ourselves. Who raises the kids most of the time? Right? It's not the father is working all day. So his wife, who's at home, who's not as religious as he, guess what level his children are going to be on? His wife's level or his level? It's a no-brainer. It's not even like, there's no Shiloh. And if the woman's going this way, and he wants to become firmer, and he's going to make her more firm. Wrong! Because Torah is screaming at us here. Wrong! That's not what's going to happen. It's, so to speak, the lowest common denominator, right? The level, fact, right? Human fact. I mean, there are exceptions to every rule. But in general, the level that your wife is going to be on is the level that you're going to be on. If your wife is interested in developing spiritually, so that's what's going to happen to you. Because it's just their, I don't know, it's their smile, it's their wisdom, it's their intuition, it's their... I don't know how it works exactly. Actually, I might know how it works, but it's for a little bit of time. But I think Chazal has something to say about that as well. But the fact is that you are going to be as firm, put it in colloquial terms, as firm as your wife is. And therefore, Rabosai, I just can't control myself here, I have more to say, but I want to cut to the chase here. Right? The lesson in this, taking the biggest decision of our life seriously, is, and this might sound a little bit, you know, rough, might sound a little bit of an aggressive statement, but I can tell you that I've seen this in my own experiences time and again, and I can tell you this, and it's going to sound pompous, but I say it l'shem Shemayim. I want to tell you something. I was up late last night, preparing a shiur. For today, this shiur. But it wasn't on this topic. And I spent the whole day wrestling with myself. I said, you know, how could I not say this shiur? Yeah, I want to say something new. I want to say something I've never said before. But this message from this week's parasha jumps out. And I said, it's so chashuv. I want to tell you something. I've had guys call me on the phone, married,
My Talmidim, Baruch Hashem, I've been zecher to be to be ready for quite a number of years, and I've been zecher to say this shir years ago already. And they call me to say, Rebbe, you saved me. Rebbe, you are right. You're right. And again, it sounds like I don't say this like I'm great. I say this because I'm just trying to show you how much not only do I feel passionate, do I believe this, what I'm saying is true, but from my own experience, from my others, and even from my own Talmidim. If you are interested, now maybe you're not interested, Chalilah. But if when you push comes to shove and you think about your life and you ask yourself, what is important to me? What is important to me? What do I want to do? What do I want to be when I grow up? What do I want my family to look like? What do I want to leave to my children and grandchildren? What's chashuv at the end of the day after 120? What's important to me? What do I want to leave behind? What contribution do I want to make to this world? The bottom line is, yeah, we leave a few dollars behind here and there, but you know, etzem, we leave our children behind. And our legacy is in our children. And what they do carries the day about whether we're successful or not. If you want, if you dream that in a perfect world, right now you're not making that decision this minute. From a couple of years down the line, you're going to be making a decision that's going to shape most, or at least more than, as I said, more than any other decision, most of what your children are going to be like. And you want to ensure that your kids will be, I don't know what the words you want to use, more from than you, not make the same mistakes that you made, maybe, or holy. They want that they do the right thing, that they're little tzaddikim, that they learn, that they daven, that they want to do mitzvahs, that they love Torah, that they love Israel, they love the Jewish people, etc., 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 etc. Let me tell you now, you are not going to be the most influential person. If you want that to happen, listen to my words. The Torah tells us here to marry a woman who is more committed, who is more holy, who is more, again, pardon my terminology, who's firmer than you. Listen, I'm not saying go marry a Hasidic girl from Barapai. That's not going to work, right? But that's not what I mean to say. What I mean to say is, whatever Madrega you want, you're on, marry in a way that someone's going to be who's going to be more, who's going to bring you up. Because the bottom line is, wherever she is, that's where you're going to be. You're either going to be where she is below you or she is above you. I can almost promise you that. There are exceptions to every rule. And I've seen just from, as I said, in my own short life, people, and I see them, and I can tell you, even people who I'm not close to, people who I know, and I could see it, oh my gosh, I know why that guy's not more fun. I know why that guy doesn't go to shul, why he doesn't learn, etc. I'm just giving simple examples, but why he hasn't developed? Because I know him. I see him. He has a big heart. He has a big neshama. He wants to. So what happens in the end? Where does it get lost? Where does the spiritual energy go? The answer is, it disappears. It disappears in his wife's disinterest. And his wife's quiet, but aggressive, right, interests. You know, she doesn't want him to learn on Sunday. She's not interested in him. Right? She doesn't want him to go to a shir. So maybe it's not going to come out, you know, exactly, I don't want you to go to shir. Maybe it's not going to come out that way. But you know what? The same guy who got married, and I've seen this as well, got married, not the greatest guy. He makes the right decision. He marries a good woman. I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable to see the development. Look, I'll tell you myself. I mean, I was an axe murderer before I got married. Yeah. I mean, my wife is much more righteous than me. I had the good fortune and the wisdom to be able to figure this out before I pulled the trigger. Man, I gotta figure that out. The best I can say, at least also for myself, by far and away the best decision I ever made. By far. Right? And I'm thankful to God. But the point is that I want to share this little secret with you. Right? I think it's so valuable. But I'm not done. I have more rayos for you. If you look in the pasuk in Parashat Yisro, in Shmos, Perikates, Pasuk Gimel, where the Torah tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm giving you the Torah. I'm giving you the Torah, says the pasuk. Umosha Allah Elo Elokim. Hashem goes up, and he cried out Hashem in our heart. Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, okay. Kol, listen to these words. Kol tomar lebeis Yaakov v'sagei lebnei Yisrael. Go ahead and teach the following Ten Commandments to Beis Yaakov, and then tell it to the Bnei Yisrael. Beis Yaakov, that sounds familiar. That's some kind of girls' school someplace, right? Why is girls' school called Beis Yaakov? Says Rashi, who is Beis Yaakov? Right? Who is Beis Yaakov? Elu Anashim, says Rashi. These are the Anashim. V'sagei l'Bnei Yisrael, and then tell it to the Bnei Yisrael. So the Pirkei de Be'elazar, the Perek Mem, points out, wait a second, look at the order here. Look at the order. Who did Hashem tell Moshe to instruct the Torah with first? I'll read it again. Who gets the Torah first? The Beis Yaakov, the women. The women received the Torah before the men. Fascinating. Before the men. So said the Medrash. Amalav Kadosh Baruch Hu Moshe. Lecha mar lehem levnoi Yisrael imrotzeh lekablas Torah. Ask the Jewish women. Oh, the Jews were asked. The Jews were asked, but the women were asked before the men. Just go ask the women if they want the Torah. Why? Said the Medrash. V'lam ha-shalom le-nashim. Why did Hashem put the women first? Says the Lashon HaMedrash, I'm reading. L'fisha darkon shel anashim holchin acharei daikon shel nashim. Because these, you know, these big, macho, cool men, l'maisa, bottom line, at the end of the day, whatever the women say, the wives tell them to do, that's what they do. Pretty much. In other words, the men will follow. If you just get the women in, if they buy in, don't worry, their husbands... Their husbands will follow them spiritually. Their husbands will follow them. Could you imagine, right? Or you could even say that their husbands will be influenced. Their husbands are interested in following their wives, right? It's almost as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "Hey, I've done this before. I've been down this road before. I created a world. I had one mitzvah, one. And who did I command? I commanded others." I gave the mitzvah to Adam first, the man first, and it didn't work. It didn't work. I tried this one before. We've been down this road. It's failed. Right? I told the guy, and he was supposed to tell the woman, and he didn't work out. It didn't work out. And the woman wasn't convinced, and she ended up sinning, and then he ended up sinning. You know what? I don't want to make the same mistake twice, so to speak, right? We're going to give it to the women first. And the women will convince them. Well, don't worry. If the women say yes, that's it. You can solve. The cat's in the bag. You know, the men will follow. And I was thinking to myself just about the different, you know, the different famous women, right? Different examples in the Gemara gives about women who affected their husbands for good and for bad, right? Understand? Let's go. Let's touch upon that Chava for a second. Chava ruined her husband. Right? Ultimately, that's what happened. Right? She ruined her husband. Right? She sinned, and since she was sinful, she got her husband to sin. That's pretty bad, right? What about Zeresh, the famous Zeresh, you know, Eshes Haman? Yeah, she got her husband hung up. Yeah? She messed up on that one. Right? And he listens to her. She says, what should I do? And she tells him what to do. And he follows his wife. That's the point. Men follow their wives. What about Delilah? Everyone knows that. Delilah. Yeah? So Shimshon is not just huge physically. He's a spiritual giant. But you know what? His puny little wife destroyed him. Destroyed him. And he couldn't He couldn't hold himself back. He couldn't stand up to his little wife. Not only physically weaker, but spiritually weaker. But you know what? That's the way of the world. That's what I'm telling you. That's the way of the world. Right? We know the story of the Gemara in the Nedarim and Ksuvas that Rabbi Akiva was a Rasha by his own admission. He married a woman named Rachel. Right? And Rachel turned him, she built him, she turned him into not only a Baal Tshuva, she turned him into the greatest, one of the greatest Jews ever, Akiva. Yeah? That Rabbi Akiva, one of the greatest Jews ever to live in the world. Right? About which Moshe Rabbeinu said, look, what? Akiva should get the Torah. Why am I getting the Torah? Rabbi Akiva is greater than me. And ultimately, when it comes down, you know the famous story at the end of the day, at the end, right, when it comes to the students, he says this openly. He wasn't joking. He wasn't just there being cute. He says, hey, that's my wife. Everything I am and everything you, all of Amisol, 24,000 Tavidim are, is because of her. What would that statement mean? This little shepherd, simple guy, his wife built him from zero, from scratch, just because she had an interest in being holy and righteous. And she, one woman, she turned the world over. She turned the world over. Right? And we know, as I said, look, for good, the Tavol Ra, Shlomo HaMelech, he married a woman who...
Many women.
That's true. He married a woman, right, who was Paro's daughter. Right? It was a mistake. It developed negatively. Ultimately, at the end, it influenced Shlomo. The great tzaddik Shlomo HaMelech was influenced negatively by Avodah Zarah, because he made a mistake. He married the wrong woman. It takes only one moment to make that mistake. Right? It takes like this. Oh yeah, look how cute she is. Right? You know, wow. I met this girl at a party. Or I met this girl even at a Shabbos table. I don't really know much about her, but we're going out. You know how dangerous those words are? They're so dangerous. Because we all know, right, that once you're involved emotionally with someone, your brain doesn't work so well. Right, it just doesn't work so well. I have to tell you, for many years, I was macho. Still very macho. But for many years, I was like, ah, come on. That Shadchan idea is stupid. Stupid, come on. What are you doing? I'm a wimp. I'm not a wimp, you know? I get those chicks. Yeah? Right, you need a shotgun?
Yeah.
Where did you get a shotgun from? For. And I have to tell you, I hear that. I thought that myself. I was your age, I thought that. And I'm not saying you have to use a shotgun. I'm not saying that. I'm still not saying that. I'm not saying, oh yeah, I have to use a shotgun. I'm not saying that. But I recognize today, I recognize the chachma, right? The chachma of using your brain, right? Thinking with your brain instead of with testosterone, excuse me. Yeah? If you think like, whoa, you know what? Hey, she's not Jewish. I don't know if I want to go out with her. Yeah? You're laughing. You know how many Jews in the world are stuck in such marriages? Right? If you really ask them, you know, it's not so good. Okay, but whatever, I'm there already. Right? And that's just an extreme example. But you know what? Plenty of great examples in between. Plenty. Plenty. Oh, listen, I know already. I've been going out there, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but wait a second. Now that was when you were 18. You were stupid. You were in college. And now you're thinking you really want to get married. You want, this is your whole life. And no, whatever, you know, I like her. This, we're involved. And you know what? That is the most, there's the biggest tragedy in the world. Because it's with a whim and they get married. And that's it. That's it. As firm as she ever is, that's where your children are pretty much guaranteed. And a guy gives his whole life. He's not going to look himself in the mirror and say, listen, I'm a loser. I'm stupid. You know, listen, defense mechanism. You know, we have to hold ourselves as important. Like, we're going to say, listen, I made a decision. So they don't pay attention. And they move into a community that's fine to be not so religious. And that's it. That's the rest of their life. And you know, they have a couple of kids. What, are you going to divorce your wife? And if the person came to me and said, I also couldn't tell them to divorce their wife. I'm like, don't divorce his wife. How can I say something like that? But if a guy comes to me when he's 18, I'm going to say, you're crazy. You're crazy. Think.
Save your life. Save your spiritual life. Save your spiritual life. Save. Be smart. Be smart. Hey, man. Family planning. That's what it's all about. Alright? You gotta be smart. That's the teaching. But I'm not even joking. I'm not joking. You know, it's so critical. It's not an unimportant thing. This one, Jesus, this one. You want to wait a second. Is she from? Does she care about Torah? Does she care about mitzvahs? Does she want to have children? You know, does she want to, whatever? Who knows? There's so much that goes into a human being. Come on, each person is a world. What does she really feel? Where are her priorities? Does she daven? Does she have a relationship with God? Does she care about? Is it important to her that her children, you know, make brachos? That her children, you know, will go to yeshiva? Or is the most important thing that our children will be able to, you know, be a millionaire? What's more important to her? That's such a critical question. How could you afford not to ask such a question? You think what I'm telling you, oh yeah, you know, I'm making your life difficult. You have to do this and do this and it's tough. How could you afford not to do that? Like the risks are so high. How could you not figure out who you marry? We wouldn't marry a woman if we know that she's, you know, I don't know, she's not healthy. Wouldn't you know that? Wouldn't you try to figure that out? So spiritual health is also important. And what she really is also important. You know, the Gemara in Sota tells us that the women from Mitzrayim were the ones who saved the day. The reason why the Jewish people came out of Mitzrayim ultimately was because the Jewish women wanted to make sure that the Jewish people would continue. It's not for the Gemara says, "B'schutz nashim tzidkanias nigla avizayim Mitzrayim." The righteous Jewish women saved the men and saved the Jewish people. That's how we got out of Mitzrayim. Why? Why? Says the Gemara, because the men didn't want to have any children anymore. It's a famous Gemara. The men didn't want to have any children. The women, essentially, practically speaking, they seduced their husbands. That's what the Gemara says. They seduced their husbands in order to get pregnant to have children, to keep the Jewish people alive, or else the Jewish people wouldn't be dead. Right? They themselves had more of a spiritual strength. And where that comes from, I told you, maybe for a different shiur. I have some ideas about that. No time for it right now. And why that's true. But the fact is that they were on a higher level. They were a higher level. And therefore, when the husbands didn't give up, they said, No, we have to serve Hashem. We have to fight out, we have to have children. So it occurred to me the following thought. What happened by the Chet HaEgel? Why didn't the women save the men? Just like by Ondon Peles. Why didn't the women save the men by the Chet HaEgel? And I want to suggest something which is a tremendous chiddush. It's a chiddush. I don't know if it's, I cannot say with full conviction that this is true, but it's a thought. And that's as follows. Maybe that's the reason why Aaron HaKohen, when the Jewish people say, oh, we want to serve a golden calf, we'll make a golden calf, we'll make a golden calf. What does Aaron say in the Torah? What does it say in Bajas Gazisa? Aaron turns to them and says, what? Go to your wives and get their jewelry. Go to your wives and get the jewelry and bring it to me. So we'll have gold to make a golden calf. The Rashi says on the spot, why? Because it was just a delay tactic. It was a stolen tactic. They'll have to go home. And the wives are going to say, what? My crocodile painting that we got from the Rizzo, I'm not giving it to you. Right? Right? Or it's going to take time. Like, oh, you know, and they're going to have to find it, whatever. But it occurred to me the following shot. Is it conceivable that Aaron HaKohen knew that these women were more righteous than their husbands? And therefore, they would go ahead and then say, oh, can I have the gold? Can I have your gold here? And she's going to say, well, what? Because, well, we want to build a golden calf. She's like, you bum! You cannot build it! You're sick! You get out of here! You stay here right now! You're not going to make a golden calf over my dead body! What's the matter? You're not from? Right? And it was maybe Aaron had that in mind when he sent them to the women. I cannot prove that. It's just a thought. But of course, we know what happened. What did they do?
They said, oh, no, 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 you know, we have our own. We don't need our wives. We don't have our own. And they give them their own jewelry. That's what it says. Right? That's what it says. And perhaps the women, which of course we all know, the women were not involved in the golden calf. You know that, right? Rashi tells it. Chazal tells it. The women, none of the women sinned on the golden calf. Right? But perhaps the women didn't stop the men. That's a chiddush what I'm saying. Is because they didn't even know. They didn't know. They didn't know that their husbands were up to this. So that's what we're going to go back and say. that's maybe why they gave them their own jewelry. They weren't going to say, oh, listen, now we're going to sin. They know that their wives are going to put them, you know, get them in trouble for doing that. Right? So the women didn't know that men were doing it, were planning this. And that's why they sin. You know, I can show you, okay, that people spend months and months, years, I would say, years, going to advisors, right, and researching their careers, you know, asking people for advice about schooling, right, forming opinions about what type of mortgage to get, you know, what kind of car to buy, right? I mean, people spend a long time, career development. But when it comes to marrying a woman, when it comes to the development of your family, it's the most important thing in the world. And people are like quick to say, nah, whatever, I don't have to ask anyone's advice. Whatever, I don't have to put so much time, I don't have to think so much about this, I don't have to spend, be careful, whatever, she's cute. Right? And one has to just examine the story of Shechem. Don't tell me that Shechem was not, could never be influenced by a woman. Look what he did for Dinah! He jumped like this. He said, a bris milah? For sure. I want to get a bris milah. Give me the bris milah. He jumps to get a bris milah. Why? Because he's interested in marrying her. Right? What does that show you? Right? It shows you that he was willing. Right? She did have chen. She did have sway power. He was interested in getting a bris milah for this woman. So if that's true, so then Esav also. Right? Esav also could have been influenced by Dinah. You know, let me formulate the following thought, which is powerful, I think. And that is, if Yaakov Avinu, in this story that we're saying, Yaakov Avinu was punished for not helping his brother marry a woman who would influence him to do tshuva, I repeat, if Yaakov Avinu was punished For not helping his brother to marry a woman who would influence the tshuva, kal vachomer, bebenot shel kal vachomer. We, if we don't marry a woman, marry for ourselves, to change ourselves, right? To marry off ourselves to a woman who will help us improve, that's punishable. We learn from this story that is potentially punishable. I think that formulation is very powerful. It was only his brother, and he got smacked. He got punished. And what about ourselves? We're more responsible for ourselves than our brothers. Here's a man who was punished because he didn't make sure that his brother did tshuva by marrying the right woman. So don't you think that if Yaakov would have married a woman, so to speak, would have been in the same position, wouldn't have married a woman who was kosher, I don't think he would have even been more punished? You don't think that we can say from this story that we could, God forbid, potentially be punished for not marrying someone who's a kosher person? You know, you see the Gemara is in Ksuba Staf Samach Zayin, and also in Tainis, the Gemara tells stories about a great, great Amorim, great, like Marukva, great, and others, great Amorim. And the Gemara tells us, like almost like backhandedly, the Gemara throws in stories about their wives, and the Gemara says, this is not my own expression, the Gemara says their wives were even greater than them. These great people that we heard of, we never heard of their wives almost. Who ever heard of these women? But the Gemara says their wives are greater. Greater things happen for their wives. They have more spiritual power than their husbands. Right? What do we see from that? That almost like this leads us to wonder, to wonder about the possibility that that's the reason why these people came, why these great Amoraim became so great. Because their wives were greater than them. The Gemara doesn't tell it to you that way, but I'm suggesting that. That if we find these giants were so great, right? Oh yeah, it was just a shidduch. Maybe not. Right? Their wives were greater than them. And if this axiom is correct, so the wives pull them up to their greatness. Right? And that's maybe why these men, shalivu shalachem shalahu, right? The reason why they became what they became was because of the wives. The most famous story in the world, right, is Sarah. Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Avram, I know you're great, but your spiritual decision making is incorrect here. Right? Your wife, she's quiet a lot of time. But right now, she told you something. Come on. Listen to the woman, son. Right? So I was once in a restaurant. And I hear these, you know, like 100-year-old men, these cute old men. They're double dating, so to speak. They're out, two couples, right? It's two old men with their wives, right? And the old guys, they're standing right next to me. And the women go, I don't know, who knows where, you know, they walk away from the table. And one guy turns to the other and goes, What is your secret? And he says, you married, you know, 78 years, you know, to your wife, you know. So the guy says back, I heard this, the guy says back, he goes, it says in the Torah, Hashem told Avram, Kol Asher Tomar Sarah, Shema Bekola. Whatever your wife Sarah says, listen to her. Right? Then he goes. It just says to listen to her. You don't have to do what she says, but listen to her. Right? I thought that was so funny, right? So the point is that, but here the Gemara is telling us more than that, right? It's not just that he's just listen to her talk, right? Supposedly you should do it. You should do it, right? She said, she's worth listening to. And there it is, that's a model. There it is, that's a model of Jewish marriage right there. Right? This plays in. That's why Avraham Avinu, he goes crazy. Right? He realizes he's going to die, his son's growing up. What's his biggest concern? He goes crazy about the fact that he wants his son to make sure that his son is going to marry a good girl. More than anything else, you see, if you read the story, he does things he never does. He's so aggressive and out of character. You better swear to me. He's going crazy on this guy, Eliezer. Make sure she's a katumi, a good midos, a good family. Don't you dare. But what's the big deal? Just make Eliezer say, listen, look after my grandson. You know, look after my little boy, you know, after I'm gone. That's not what he goes, no. That's not what he does. Because he doesn't say a word about that, because then it's too late. That's not the most important thing. The most important thing is to start it right from the beginning. You better make sure that my son marries the right girl. That's the most important thing I leave behind. I want to end with a tremendous chiddush. Tremendous chiddush. I can't. It's just a thought I had. I certainly cannot prove this, but it was the thought I was thinking about today. Rashi in this pasuk, the Sifsei Chachamim on this pasuk, in this Rashi, asks, quotes, from the Nachlas Yaakov, he asks the following question. Why was it that Leah also wasn't punished? Leah also could theoretically have married Esau. Right? Leah also theoretically could have married Esau, and therefore could have changed it. Okay, and there's different answers. I mean, I would have said the discussion, what do you mean? She had no opportunity. I mean, the fathers made the decisions in those days, right? Over here, Yaakov decided that Dina was going to marry you or was not going to marry you. That's why Yaakov was punished. That was his decision. Right? Leah's father was loving, right? Say that Leah was punished. Okay, whatever it is. But he's in his second answer, okay, the Sifsei Chachamim quotes from the Nachal's second answer, the Nachal's Yaakov. Listen to this. He says the following. Because Leah did not have the koach. This is what he suggests, that Leah didn't have the kochos. She was a little, I don't know, maybe weaker in character. She actually did not have the kochos to persuade Esau, which is against the bulk of what we're talking about tonight. Okay. But Dina did. Leah didn't, but Dina did. And then he said, and the proof that Dina did, I didn't really point to point out, the proof that Dina did, because that ultimately, who did Dina marry? I just saw this today for the first time. I never heard this before. I've heard other chazals. But it's quotes there, and I have to look it up, look into it. Right? So I'm speaking a little off the cuff, but this is what he says. He goes, the proof that Dina did have that ability to persuade and be Makarev is because Dina later on married Eov. She married Eov, and who was apparently not Jewish and not righteous, what he says. And Dina, was Megayarim. She was Megayarim. And she turned him into a tzaddik. And she brought him to Tshuva, and to Ma'aseh Tovah, and to goodness. And Yaakov should have seen. Look at the potential of my daughter, right? You should have known his daughter had that tremendous potential. And the Harayah, she did it. She did change Eov, right? And turned around. So she could have done the same thing to Esau. Fine. It occurred to me the following thought after I read this. And this is a real, it's a chiddush, right? But you know, remember the story. What happened when after the rape? After Yaakov comes back, Yaakov hears about what happened. And what does he do? What does he do? Nothing. He does nothing. Yaakov does nothing. Then the sons come home, and then behind Yaakov's back, they go ahead and go crazy. And you got to wonder, right? The question was try to figure out, why did Yaakov not react? Why didn't it bother Yaakov? Why didn't it bother Yaakov about the fact that Dina had been, you know, taken as a wife for Shechem? And maybe the answer is as follows. Maybe the answer is that Yaakov didn't have the courage. He didn't have the courage to place his daughter Dina into the arms of Esau. He didn't want to do it. In other words, maybe he knew that she had that potential, but he didn't want to do it. He wanted to protect her. He didn't want to give her to Esau. He knew about Esau's craziness. He didn't want it. But once she was already violated and already in the lap, so to speak, of Shechem, maybe he didn't do anything to Shechem because he understood. He figured. That Dina would turn Shechem into a tzaddik. She would turn Shechem into a tzaddik, just like she ultimately did with you. Just like she might have done with Esau. He figured, oh, listen, they're already married. Who's going to want to marry her? She's not a virgin, right? Like in those days. Who's going to marry her? Listen, she'll change him anyway. The joke's on him. You know, that's why he says, oh, they're getting a bismillah, right? They're going to get... He thinks his sons are going in that direction. Give yourself a bismillah, right? He's getting from. And she's going to, before long, watch. He's going to walk around the shrine and sit there in a yarmulke, you know. And he thought, oh, she's going to be Makarvin. That's why he didn't do anything. That's why when they kill him, he said, what are you doing? Right? And ultimately, Takub gets married off to who? To a Russia. Takub to a Russia. Right? to Eo. And Shitaka changes him. Remarkable. I can't prove this, right? But it's just a thought. Listen, Halavai, we should have the foresight and the courage, right, to put our decisions keep our decisions in our brains and. Have the strength and the courage to think carefully and think again and ask and examine and re-examine and ensure that we too make this most important decision successfully and hopefully bear the successful results of a marriage of Kedusha and a spiritual and spiritual reality that we bring into our lives with the marriage of a tzaddikas and a kosher Jewish woman. Thanks for listening, guys, and have a good night.